The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Arise! Good afternoon. My name is Renee Kurth, and on behalf of the entire New Court Honor Society, we welcome you to the final round of the 13th Annual Burton v. Wexler First Amendment Moot Court Competition. The competition allows students from across the United States to gather and argue a specially formulated First Amendment problem. This national competition is named for a former faculty member, Burton v. Wexler. The Washington College of Law Moot Court Honor Society is proud to honor Professor Wexler for his commitment to both First Amendment jurisprudence and the Washington College of Law's Moot Court program. We started this weekend with 24 teams. The final two teams you have before you now have competed in a quarterfinal round, a semifinal round, and are now here with you today. Today, you'll hear them argue a problem regarding a school board termination of a high school principal for refusing to remove religious speech from a public display and for additional statements he made in the ensuing controversy. The high school painting a September 11th memorial mural on the outside of a building, designing it with the diversity of the community in mind. The principal, realizing that other nations were not represented on the mural, had a crescent moon star and several words, all having significance in the Islamic faith, added to the mural. Parents, teachers, and other members of the community voiced their dislike to the addition. In response, the principal held a meeting where he spoke out on the issue. The principal is challenging his termination. The issues facing the court are one, whether the addition to the mural violates the Establishment Clause, and two, whether the principal's speech at the meeting was a matter of public concern. Finally, at this time, I'd like to take just a moment to thank a few key players in making this final round happen. First, I'd like to thank all the professors and faculty who helped in judging this entire weekend. In particular, Professor Stephen Wormale, Professor Angela Davis, and Professor Richard Mugolo. Also, I'd like to thank our assistant, who's amazing this weekend, Melissa Trajano, and our competition directors, Chantal Lee and Asmar Siddiqui. Also, a really important thank you goes out to our vice president, Allison Fleming. She is the behind-the-scenes person who makes everything run smoothly, and without her, this competition wouldn't have happened. At this time, Asmar Siddiqui will go through the process of today's final round.
Welcome to the Burton v. Wexler 13th Annual Moot Court Competition. The way we'll have this work is after the competitors have competed, we'll have the judges confer for a bit. They'll come back, give their feedback and remarks, and then we'll announce the winner. And I hope that the competitors can stay for a few pictures with the judges afterwards. This afternoon, we've got some fantastic competitors with us. For the petitioners, we have Sarah Siegel, if you could stand and be recognized, and John O'Callaghan. Thank you very much. And for the respondents, we have Menelie Larry Journey and Elizabeth Hayes. Our esteemed panel of judges includes some fantastic people. The Honorable Sharon Prost, Circuit Court Judge appointed by President Bush in 2001. She got her bachelor's from Cornell University, her MBA from George Washington, and she's a WCL alum. She also got her LLM from George Washington University School of Law. She worked in the labor relations as a specialist for the United States Civil Service Commission. She was a labor relations specialist and auditor for the United States General Accounting Office. She worked as a field attorney for the Federal Labor Relations Authority, an attorney at the Internal Revenue Office, assistant solicitor, associate solicitor, acting solicitor at the National Labor Relations Board. She's chief counsel for the Senate Committee on Labor and Human Resources, minority chief counsel, deputy chief counsel, and chief counsel at the Committee on Judiciary for the United States Senate. She was born in Newburyport, Massachusetts, and she has two children, Matthew and Jeffrey. The Honorable Edwin Stern presides over the administration of the Superior Court of New Jersey, Appellate Division, the largest state court of appeals in the country. First appointed to the bench in 1981, Judge Stern sat on the Superior Court of Law Division in Hudson County and the Superior Court of Law and Criminal Divisions in Essex County before he was temporarily assigned to the Appellate Division in 1985. That assignment became permanent in 1986. He has since chaired the Supreme Court Criminal Practice Committee since 1986 and is the judicial representative on the New Jersey Sentencing Commission. Judge Stern is a 1966 graduate of Columbia University Law School, undergraduate from Rutgers. He clerked at the Appellate Division for Judge Edward Galkin, and he was in private practice until 1970, when he joined the Hudson County Prosecutor's Office as a first assistant. Then he went on to acting prosecutor and director of the criminal practice in the Administrative Office of the Courts, Deputy General of the Department of Law and Public Safety. And in 1980, he joined the Attorney Accountability Office Commission as an assistant director for legal services, and it was from that position he was nominated to the bench. Judge Stern and his wife, Beverly, live in West Orange, and they have three sons, Scott, Mark, and Paul, who is a current student. And then finally, we have the Honorable Reggie Walton, appointed to the United States District, he's a United States District Judge for the District of Columbia, appointed by President Bush, chairperson of the National Prison Rape Reduction Commission, Criminal Law Committee. He's associate judge of the D.C. Superior Court from 1981 to 1989 and 1991 to 2001. Presiding Judge, Family Division, Presiding Judge for the Domestic Violence Unit, and Deputy Presiding Judge for the Criminal Division. He's been Associate Director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy in the Executive Office of the President. He's President Bush's Senior White House Advisor for Crime, Executive Assistant for the United States Attorney's Office, and an Assistant United States Attorney. He's Chief of the Career Criminal Unit, Staff Attorney for the Defender Association of Philadelphia. He has received his Bachelor's of Arts from West Virginia State College in 1971, his JD from WPL, and he was profiled in a book entitled Black Judges on Justice, Perspectives from the Bench. He's also taught judges on criminal law subjects throughout the United States Department of Justice and the American Bar Association Central and East European Law Initiative Reform Project in Russia. He's also an instructor at Harvard University Law School's Advocacy Workshop and a faculty member of the National Judicial College in Reno, Nevada. He's also a big brother. Judge Walton was born in Donora, Pennsylvania, and he has one daughter.
And a wife.
And a wife.
I'm a part of his wedding in Liberty Board of Education of Exactly.
Yes, Your Honor.
Petitioner's ready. You may commence. Ms. Cedar.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Sarah Siegel, and along with my co-counsel, John O'Callaghan, we represent the petitioner, Libertyville Board of Education. May we reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal time, please?
Permission granted.
Thank you, Your Honors. Would Your Honors like a brief recitation of the facts of this case?
I don't think that's necessary. I think we're prepared. We can utilize your time when you choose.
Thank you, Your Honor. The petitioner respectfully requests that this court overturn the ruling of the Court of Appeals and uphold the district court order granting summary judgment in favor of the school board. My co-counsel will argue that the Arabic segment violated the Establishment Clause. I will argue, for 13 minutes, that the principal statements were not protected by the First Amendment for two reasons. First, his statements were a matter of private interest, not public concern. And second, the school board's interest in maintaining an efficient and effective school and work environment outweighs the principal's interest in speech. The principal's statements were a matter of private interest, not public concern. According to the test set forth by this court in Connick v. Myers, the content, form, and context of his statements must be examined to determine whether they rise to the level of public concern. The content of the principal's statements, as seen on page 4 of the record, are, and I quote, "I am angered that the school board does not even seem to acknowledge that my actions were based on good faith. I feel as if they are turning their backs on me. They didn't even ask me to change it. They said it must be completely removed."
What is the relevance or materiality of that to this lawsuit?
The relevance, Your Honor?
Yes.
Is that in this situation, the principal statements, because they were of private interest, are not entitled to First Amendment protection and therefore the school board acted lawfully in terminating the principal's employment because his statements were disruptive and impeded their ability to deliver their services.
Does that mean that you can terminate somebody for expressing personal opinion about a non-public issue?
Your Honor, when those statements, as the principals did in this case, impact the ability of the government entity to efficiently deliver their services, and are so disruptive that those services cannot be delivered, then yes, this court has given deference to an employer's determination to terminate an employee.
Is any criticism of the school board sufficient to establish that that would be result in the inefficiency of the school or some disruption in the school?
No, Justice Post. It's only those statements that are so disruptive that the school cannot deliver their services. And
does the school under that standard is it incumbent upon the school to make some sort of showing that there was some result, there was some disruption as a result of what the principal said?
No, Your Honor. The school board is required to show that there was a reasonable prediction of disruption according to the standards set forth by this court in Waters versus Churchill. And the school board has done this because the principal made these statements in front of teachers and parents of Libertyville High School students, and because of that and because of his position as the principal, his statements were extremely disruptive and detrimental to the harmony and discipline of this school. Returning to the issue of
the substance of his concern was a matter of public interest, was it not? It was intertwined with his personal concern, but it was also a matter of public interest.
Your Honor, we do not dispute, that the September 11th memorial was a matter of public concern. However, the school board's contention is that the disputed statements here are less about that memorial and more an internal employment dispute, in effect, the principal complaining that he's unhappy with the way he's treated by his boss. And because the content and the form and the context must be examined, it's also important that the principal made these statements in a private home and in an informal tone of voice and in a private setting. And that speaks to the fact that he was speaking as an employee on a matter that was of concern to him and not on a matter that was of concern to the general public or the community of Liberty. Also,
does our holding on the establishment clause issue necessarily impact or resolve our holding on the free speech termination issue?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. Because the principal was fired for insubordination and unlawful endorsement of Islam, if Your Honors found that, in fact, the school board did act lawfully in terminating his employment, that is a separate issue from the Establishment Clause violation. The context of the principal's speech, again, was in his home. This was not a school-sponsored event, nor was it a public forum where perhaps the calculus would have been different. However, even if Your Honors were to find that his statement...
Does that help you or does that hurt you if it's in his own home?
Your Honor, the fact that it's in his own home helps us for two reasons. First, that speaks to the fact, because he was speaking among friends, that this was a private statement on an issue of employment. And second, that these friends consisted of teachers and parents speaks to the disruption issue. Because the principal made his statements in front of his subordinates, this served to denigrate the school board in front of their employees.
It seems to me that you're trying to have it both ways. You're saying on the one hand, we want it to be private, but on the other hand, you get to the disruption simply because you have to acknowledge that it was public. If it were a purely private statement, then it wouldn't have been disruptive, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. Our contention is that the statements were private, but that if Your Honors were to disagree and to hold that they were of public concern, that under the test established by this court in Pickering versus the Board of Education, the school board's interest would still triumph over that of the principal.
But that would be true, I take it, irrespective of the subject of a speech or where it was said, as long as it was perceived to be insubordination and affected his relationship with the Board of Education.
That's correct, Your Honor. The fact that it was in his home is simply a factor in showing that it was private speech, and the fact that it was in front of teachers is a factor in proving that it was disruptive to the ability of the school board to fulfill their mission.
What makes it disruptive? I mean, is it simply because it was a negative statement about what the school board was doing? Does that mean that it causes inefficiency and disruption in the school system?
No, Your Honor, not all negative statements would be disruptive. However, these particular negative statements painted the school board first as unsupportive of their employees. When he said that, "I feel they are turning their backs on me," that indicated that the school board was not supportive of the principal. And also,
well, qualitatively, that's a pretty mild statement. It wasn't a statement that the superintendent is corrupt or violating the law or something. He says, "I am angry. They turned their back on me. They didn't think I was acting in good faith." Is the nature of this statement relevant? I mean, the words?
Your Honor, the words are relevant in as much as whom he made the statements in front of and the impact of the words based on that. The environment at Libertyville High School was already quite contentious at this time, and in fact, earlier in that meeting, several of the teachers present had expressed concerns about low morale and a lack of confidence in superiors at that school as a result.
The record reflects that?
Yes, Your Honor, the record reflects that.
That's a concern I have. What does this record suggest that what he said ended up actually being disruptive? Are you speculating that that would have been the case?
Your Honor, to briefly answer Justice Stern's question, that's indicated on page 4 of the record. And to return to your question, Justice Walton, you're correct. There is not evidence on the record that these statements were extremely disruptive. However, the school board must only show a reasonable prediction of disruption. And because the principal's statements also painted the school board as reactionary, when she said they didn't even ask me to change it, they said it must be completely removed, that actually isn't true, and paints the school board as reactionary and irrational, which is a very negative light to paint them in front of their employees.
But your position makes it very risky for anybody to take exception to a school board, because if what you're saying is correct, it seems to me they're always going to be putting their job on the line if they do that.
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because if the principal had been speaking on a matter of public concern, as the teacher was in Pickering versus the Board of Education, then the free speech interest would weigh far more heavily. However, here, first, because it was not an issue of public concern, and again, because the ability of this community to educate their children is so important, and they were unable to do so here, that the school board's interest outweighs that of the
principal. There's a fairly sizable Arabic population in this community, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Don't they have a right to be represented? Isn't it important, especially at this point in time, considering the objective of this meal? Is it important that that segment of the community be reflected on it?
Yes, Your Honor. It is extremely important that the Arabic and Middle Eastern populations of this high school be recognized. However, the way in which the principal chose to do so, as my co-counsel will speak to further, was simply inappropriate. And additionally, the statements that are at issue are not directly related to that. Also,
if the statement were in his home to his colleagues, and it was more than, "I disagree with the board and the superintendent, and I really think there's a public policy at stake, and this mural should stay as it is. I disagree emphatically." End of statement. Same result?
That would be a much closer call, Your Honor, because then he would be speaking more specifically about the memorial. Although, as Justice Walton...
It was clear by implication what he was doing, right?
It is related, Your Honor, that's correct. Yet even if Your Honors were to find that and to hold that this is a matter of public concern, the school board triumphs because, as Justice Walton suggested, the education of the children of this community is of utmost importance. because the principal's statements first indicated to the teachers that the school board was not supportive, and second, because in his role as the principal, he is required to implement school board policies. The school board could not trust after this that he would do so, and in fact may have feared something akin to a miniature insurrection on their hands, where they could not guarantee that the principal would implement their policies necessary to educate the children of this community.
But there's nothing in the record to indicate that he had previously been in opposition to the board.
That's correct, Your Honor. The record does not indicate that he had done anything wrong previously. However, the character of these statements was so disruptive as to support the school board's decision to terminate his employment. And also, this court has frequently given great deference to an employer's reasonable prediction of disruption, because if this court were to become involved in every employment dispute, as this court stated in Connick, government offices would be almost unable to function.
But so hypothetically, are you tying this to the conduct? What if you went in the next Monday morning, you took down the mural and just accepted it, clearly accepted it? In other words, it posed no risk that he was going to be insubordinate and fight the school board on it. Would that affect your view of the protectiveness of his speech?
You might answer the question completely.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, if he went in and removed the segment later, that would not really affect the speech at issue here, because the statement still would have been made. And because his employment was terminated for insubordination, the insubordination would already have occurred. Perhaps in that situation, this lawsuit may not have arisen because the school board might have been appeased. However, it does not change our position on this issue. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. O'Callaghan. Mr. O'Callaghan, before we begin, let me briefly state we do not have the entire record. So may I ask you if the record reflects the size of the mural and the size of the segment of the script?
Your Honor, I do not believe that the record reflects the size of the segment, but in the appendix, the Arabic segment is shown in proportion to the September 11th memorial.
Is the size of the segment in proportion to the entire mural relevant to the issue before us?
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead, sir.
To the number of issues.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is John O'Callaghan, and I also represent Petitioner Libertyville Board of Education in this matter.
Mr. O'Callaghan, let me just explain what I'm trying to ask. What is the proportion of the segment to the entire mural?
Your Honor, the Arabic segment is significantly, it is, although it may be small in proportion to the rest of the memorial, it stands out in a number of ways. First, it is not associated with any flag. Second, it has two words that flank the top and bottom of the Crescent Moon Star, those words being Shahada and Jihad. The word Shahada is the Muslim declaration of faith, and in English it translates to, there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is his prophet. The word Jihad is an Arabic word that means struggle, and it refers to a Muslim's daily struggle to follow the precepts of Islam. Taken together in conjunction with the crescent moon and star, which is not associated with the flag, makes the Arabic segment a significantly religious object and a violation of the Establishment Clause.
Well, assuming that if it stood alone on the side or wall of a school building, that you would be right, in context of the overall mural, and in context of the symbol that the mural represents with respect to the community as a whole, is there not a difference? That is to say, is there not a difference that it's a segment of a large mural as opposed to an independent display?
Your Honor, the Arabic segment is a part of the entire display, because it is with the World Trade Center, an American flag, and flanked by flags of different nations representing the diversity of the community. However, the Arabic segment is the only explicitly religious object, and it is the only one that has words expressly making references to one particular faith.
Well, it's not the only religious object. I mean, I think the record indicates that there was an Israeli flag there, and as my recollection is that the Israeli flag has a Jewish star. So how can you conclude that that's the only religious object? Why is the Jewish star less religious than the symbol at issue here?
Your Honor, the Star of David, which is on the flag of Israel, is not a violation of the Establishment Clause because this court held in the Barnett case that flags are symbols of state, whereas religious symbols convey theological ideas.
But the same symbol is also found in a number of Arab nation flags, correct?
Yes, Your
Honor. So you're saying, clearly, if those flags had been shown and the same symbol existed, but it was in the context of a particular flag, then your position is that would have been okay?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, the flag of Malaysia, which has established Islam as their national religion, does have the crescent moon and star on its flag. It is, I believe, the third flag from the right on the top flank of flags on the memorial, and that is not a violation of the Establishment Clause.
Let me ask you then, so the focus is really on the words. And the test here under Lennon and other cases, is it not a reasonable person standard, a reasonable observer standard?
Yes, Your Honor. That is one of the prongs of the three-prong test set out in Lemon versus Kurtzman.
Okay. And is there anything? Did the school board come forward with some indication as to how or whether a reasonable person would have even understood what those words meant?
Your Honor, the school board did not explicitly go to the principal and express to him the legal nature of or the legal problems with the Arabic segment. However, a reasonable observer in the City of Liberty, which has a significant Arabic population, is deemed to know what the words shahada and jihad mean. And even those members that are not of Arabic descent or who are of Arabic descent and do not know what those words mean, it is expected that those Arabic students that do understand it will tell other students. And therefore, a reasonable observer in the city would know what those words mean.
But there's also a different interpretation in the context of the display as a whole. I know I'm coming back to my first point, but we acknowledge that it is from the perception of the reasonably prudent person in the community.
Yes, Your Honor.
And how that reasonable person interprets the word jihad in this day and age, irrespective of what the actual meaning of the word might be?
That is possible, Your Honor. Even if the reasonable observer in the City of Liberty does not make the connection between jihad and the sixth pillar of Islam as it is, they would make the, albeit erroneous, connection to the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. The term jihad there was used to convert holy wars against populations in order to convert them to Islam. So there is a connection, especially because it is on a September 1st memorial, that a reasonable observer in the community that does not know exactly what jihad means will make the connection to a specific type of extremist fundamentals of Islam. In addition, Your Honor...
But your position can't be predicated on the politics of it, correct? I mean, this is purely religion. So your answer seems to be introducing the sort of how insightful the statement might be or whatever. But we're assuming that it's just the religious aspect of this, correct, and not the political aspect of this that's at issue, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would the situation change if the mural had included clearly religious statements representing other religions around the world, Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism? I mean, if there were words that expressed some faith in that along with it, would that affect our view of whether or not there was an endorsement of religion here?
Perhaps, Your Honor. Indeed, the school board does not want to give the impression that they're holding Islam to a higher standard than any other religion.
My question is, if the school board had allowed every religion to express itself, or more than one religion to be expressed there, would that change the question of whether or not there's a specific endorsement of religion in this context, or would the school not be able to do any of that?
Perhaps, Your Honor. In fact, the White House includes the crescent moon and star to honor Ramadan on the Washington ellipse, along with the menorah and a Christmas creche as a celebration of the holiday season. If the intent of the city with the Satan Lemov Memorial was to recognize different religions in the community, that would be a much different scenario than the situation we have here, where they are representing countries via flags and not specific religions. That is why the Arabic segment, with its profound religious nature, is such a violation of the Establishment Clause and really comes out and strikes the reasonable observer as much different than all of the other flags on the memorial.
But how does that work in terms of the Lemon Test and the thing about fostering entanglement? I mean, why is it not fostering entanglement to entangle yourself in 10 religions, but it is fostering entanglement if there's only one religion there? How do you apply the Lemon Test to this distinction you're making with, if more are there, it's okay, but only one is not okay?
Your Honor, according to the test set out in Lemon versus Kurtzman, the school board need only bring on one of the three prongs of the Lemon test for this court to find that the Arabic segment violates the Establishment Clause. However, the school board contends that the Arabic segment excessively entangles government with religion. This court set out, this court decided in Lee versus Weissman that a benediction at a graduation ceremony excessively entangled the government with religion because it was the principal making those religious choices. Here, the principal has made his own independent choice without the consent of the community to put one specific religion on the memorial.
But isn't it highly unlikely, if you consider the nature of this mural and the objective of it, for an objective observer to believe that this was supporting a religion that is perceived to have been the impetus for the commission of 9/11?
No, Your Honor. The fact that Islam has some tenuous connection to the 9/11 attacks is not the basis of the school board's case here. The Arabic segment expresses fundamentals of the Islamic faith, the word shahada, the Muslim profession of faith, and the word jihad, which is a deeply religious word of the Islamic religion.
Compare, if you will, this segment in the context of a 9/11 memorial with the Ten Commandments in front of a state capitol in the context of the history of the state of Texas. Why would this be different than the display of the Ten Commandments in the Van Orden case?
Your Honor, there is one very big difference between this case and the case Van Orden versus Perry. In Van Orden, the Ten Commandments there had been there for a number of years, since the 60s. Here, the Arabic segment was put up, here the September 11th memorial has been recently put up, and the school board complained right away. In Van Orden versus Perry,
time is critical in terms of objection, in terms of no objection.
Time was one of the factors in Van Orden versus Perry, but also the context of the Ten Commandments in that case were that they were surrounded by other monuments, and it expressed more of the historical nature of the Ten Commandments as a history of a contribution to Western law, more than its religious nature. Here, however, the connection between the Arabic segment and September 11th is very, very tenuous, and the school board had made its objections timely, and also there's no historical connection between the Arabic segment here and the fundamentals of the Islamic faith and any type of Western law in our nation. Furthermore, Your Honor, there is no primary secular purpose for the principal to put up the Arabic segment. Although his stated purpose was to represent the Arabic Middle Eastern nations, putting up an explicitly Islamic segment is a very poor means of doing so. This court has cautioned other courts in the case, in the Santa Fe case, that courts should look to see if the government's stated purpose is a sham. Here, Your Honors, the principal's purpose is insincere for two reasons. First, the principal could have had a viable secular alternative than putting the Arabic segment up. The principal could have written a message in memoriam in peace in Arabic. Second, Your Honors, the principal could have also inserted a flag from the Arabic Middle Eastern region, such as the flag of Saudi Arabia or Jordan. To bolster such representation, the principal could have also inserted that Arabic message of memoriam in peace with that flag instead of putting an explicitly religious segment on the September 11th memorial. Your Honors, in conclusion, the Arabic segment expresses a religious message which has no primary secular purpose. It advances religion and fosters excessive government entanglement with religion. Therefore, this court should reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals below and hold that the Arabic segment violates the Establishment Clause. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Perlman.
When the respondents are ready, they may proceed. Ms. Laurie Gunn, please proceed.
Please the court. My name is Melanie Mary Johnny. Together with my co-counsel Elizabeth Hayes, we represent respondent Mr. Ahmed Rahim. Libertyville School Board abused its power when it terminated Mr. Rahim in violation of his constitutional right to free speech. First, the appellate court correctly determined that Mr. Rahim's speech is protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution. Second, my co-counsel will argue that Mr. Rahim's Arabic addition to the mural was not a violation of the Establishment Clause. This court should affirm the appellate court's decision and grant summary judgment in favor of Mr. Rahim for the following.
Does our holding on the second issue, the Establishment Clause issue, control the holding with respect to termination?
No, Your Honor. While opposing counsel argues that Mr. Rahim was terminated because of his insubordination, that is not the case. Opposing counsel fails to mention that in Unhealthy v. Doyle, this court stated that the board has the burden of proof to show by clear and convincing evidence that they would have made the same decision regardless of the speech, and the board has not met its burden. On page 4 of the record, the superintendent for the first time spoke with Mr. Rahim, personally invited him and spoke with him, expressed the concerns of the board, gave them a few days to think about it, and also expressed a desire to compromise. However, after the superintendent heard the news of the meeting, he informally, in a form of a letter, wrote to Mr. Rahim, giving him an ultimatum and no longer expressed a desire to compromise. Therefore, it is evident that his termination was because of his speech.
Doesn't that fact in the record hurt your client rather than help him? Because that factual situation, as the petitioner suggested, suggests that the content of the speech in his home was not exactly truthful. And doesn't the case law suggest that the statement has to be truthful in order to be protected?
Yes, Your Honor. However, his statements were truthful. He states, "I feel as if they're turning their backs on me." That is his personal feeling, and that can be true.
But didn't he also state they didn't even ask me to change it, and right after they had offered or at least suggested a compromise?
Correct, Your Honor. While the board did regularly express a desire to compromise, they did not ask him to think of a different way of presenting it and come back to the board and speak with it. They merely said, "We're willing to perhaps compromise." And that's where the statements on page 4 came from.
But as your opponent indicates, aren't these really statements of private concern? He's not really expressing a public interest. He's personally offended by what the school board did to him.
No, Your Honor. On page 4 of the record, responding, Mr. Rahim says, "I'm angry that the school board does not realize that my actions were based on good faith." His actions are...
We're talking about the statements that he made, not what may have been in his mind.
No, Your Honor. It's a statement that he actually makes at the meeting on page 4. He says, "I am angered that the board does not recognize that my actions were based on good faith." His actions are referring to him, his addition to the mural. Further, he states, they did not ask me to take it down. They said it must be completely removed. It is referring to his addition to the mural.
We may have a stronger case, though, if the substance of the statement we were concerned about specifically indicated his interest in having the Arabic students represented on this mural.
Well, he could have expressly said the mural or the children. However, the fact that he did not say that does not change the fact that the context and point of the speech was to discuss his addition to the mural. And the reason for him wanting to add the addition was to represent the Arabic students of the community. This is a matter of public concern because it is a newsworthy event. This court held in the year 2004 in the City of San Diego versus Roe. Public concern is a matter of legitimate news interest and concern to the public at the time of the incident. In this case, it is newsworthy because, as stated on page 4 of the record, his addition to the mural caused strong uproar within the community. Furthermore, as stated on page 4 of the record, at the meeting there was a vast number of those there who agreed with Mr. Rahi and some who did not. Therefore, within the community, there was a discussion and dispute of whether the addition was appropriate or not. Therefore, this is a matter of public concern.
Assuming it is a matter of public concern, then, if this context was such a ferocious matter of debate in the public, and can't we conclude that his statements were insightful? I mean, his purpose in gathering people involved in the school at his home was presumably to encourage them to take some action on his behalf, correct?
No, Your Honor. His purpose was to inform the public, the parents of the community who are sending their spoke children to the school. His purpose was to inform them that the school board is not allowing him to represent the Arabic students. On page 3 of the record, it states that Libertyville School has the highest percentage of Arabic students in the city, and therefore, those parents have a right to know how the board is treating their principal when the principal is trying to represent those students.
I take it that you're acknowledging that your case in terms of termination is premised on the common theme of public concern and no establishment clause violation. In other words, you're acknowledging that if this was a private comment, that he could be terminated.
Not necessarily, Anna. If this is a private concern, if this is a private comment, he was terminated because of his speech only, then yes, that would be the case.
Procedurally, this is a declaratory judgment action. And do we have to decide both issues before us to resolve the issues developed in the declaratory judgment action?
Petitioner is claiming that Mr. Rahim was fired because of his insubordination. In that case, if his addition to the mural really was a violation of the Establishment Clause and his speech was not protected by the First Amendment, then yes, the school board would win and deference should be given to the board's decision. However, in this case, his addition in itself was not a violation of the Establishment Clause. Therefore, if he was fired because of that, then Mr. Rahim would win. And his statements were protected by the First Amendment, and therefore, if he was fired because of that, Mr. Rahim would still win. In looking at the content of...
Do we not therefore have to remain to the district court for an evidentiary hearing and fact-finding on the basis for this termination?
No, Your Honor, because this is a de novo case, and therefore there is no question of fact. It is merely a question of law on whether Mr. Rahim's speech was constitutionally protected or not. And therefore, this is a constitutional case, and it is appropriate in front of this court. And Mr. Rahim's speech was constitutionally protected because it is about his addition to the mural, his desire to represent the Arabic students, and the parents' need and the community's need to know what is going on within the school.
We have a lot of jurisprudence for the proposition that courts avoid constitutional issues when they are not necessary for determination. And in light of what you just said, is there not a possibility that this constitutional issue, at least with respect to free speech, can be avoided if he wasn't terminated for that reason?
Perhaps, Your Honor.
He was terminated only for insubordination.
But that is not the case. On page 5 of the record, the board admits that the reason why he was fired was due to his insubordination, as evidenced by the statements that undermine the efficiency of the school. Therefore, the school board has already admitted that the reason why he was terminated was evidenced by his statements. Because this is a matter of public concern, even when applying the balancing test, While petitioner argues that Mr. Rahim's speech affected the operation and services of the school, that is incorrect. The school's services is to deliver education to their students. Mr. Rahim's speech at his home to his friends and colleagues could not have affected the way the students are being educated.
But that's not the only thing. The school has to run efficiently. So let's assume hypothetically that come the next day, the teachers who have been incited and the parents who have gone home and expressed their concerns to the students, people start milling the hallways, they refuse to teach class. It results in some disruption of the orderly provision of education. Then doesn't the school board prevail in that case because they've been able to show the harm to the efficiency?
Correct, Your Honor. The school board would prevail. However, in this case, the record shows there is no evidence that Mr. Rahim's speech actually disturbed the efficiency of the school. While opposing counsel correctly states that the school really needs to reasonably believe that that would happen, the school does have the burden of proof to show that the speech that they reasonably believed the speech materially and substantially affected the operation of the school. And the board in this case has not met its burden.
Well, considering the turmoil that already existed, isn't it reasonable to draw that inference?
No, Your Honor, because while there might have been slight hostility within the school, the mural itself and the addition to the mural, caused the hostility, not the speech itself. Mr. Rahim was terminated directly after his speech, and there is no evidence in the record that the speech that he made at his home affected the functioning of the school in any way. Furthermore, this court has held in Tinker that fear of disturbance is not sufficient to overcome constitutional right to free speech.
So you are suggesting that the school then would have to wait and see the actual effect of his speech before they could legitimately take action. That's what you're suggesting.
No, Your Honor, if the school board reasonably believed that the speech would materially and substantially affect the operation of the school, then they would have a right to take action. However, there is no evidence in this case that there was any belief or any reasonable belief that the speech would materially and substantially affect the functioning of the school. It did not affect the way the children were receiving their education, or at least it is not evidenced by the record that it would affect it. And it did not affect the way the principal was going on with his daily duties.
But that was the purpose. That was his purpose, was it not? I mean, how did he expect to prevail? What was the point of having these people in and urging, you know, expressing his concerns about the situation, if not for the fact that he thought and hoped that his words would lead them to take some further action on his behalf?
Page 4 of the record states that Mr. Rahim held the meeting in hopes of restoring unity within the school. Because his addition to the mural had already caused hostility between the faculty and staff, he states he held the meeting to unite the school. In fact, on page 4 of the record, the parents and teachers even said that regardless of the controversy, we have to unite the school as one to deal with the issues.
That's why I suggest that maybe the record is not sufficient to decide your aspect of the case. I can understand a declaratory judgment with respect to the mural and whether it can stand as is, but I'm asking you why we shouldn't demand to create a record with respect to the free speech / termination issue.
Because the board is asking for summary judgment, and therefore they're not disputing the facts.
Well, they may not be entitled to summary judgment. That's the issue. The issue is whether or not they're disputed issues of material fact warranting summary judgment.
Because the facts clearly state the statement on page 4 that Mr. Rahim said at his meeting, and that is the statement that was protected, and that is the statement that on page 5 the board says he was terminated
because of that statement and only because of that statement.
That's what the board states. His termination was due to his insubordination as evidenced by the statements at his meeting that they claim caused a disruption in the school. However, because there is no evidence that that his speech actually did affect the school, only because the intent of the First Amendment was not was so that public employees would be able to discuss matters of public concern with the community, because they are in a unique position and are qualified to comment on such matters because they are there and they know what is going on. With sobering news, Your Honor, this court should hold the trial court's decision and grant summary judgment in favor of Mr. Rahim. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hayes?
Good afternoon. Chief Justice Stern, may I please the court. Elizabeth Hayes for respondent, Ahmed Rahim. This court has stated that total separation between church and state is not possible in an absolute sense, and that some relationship between religion and government is inevitable. To determine when that relationship actually violates the Establishment Clause, this court has followed the endorsement test in cases involving government display in an effort to give analytical content to the Lemon test. Under the endorsement test, Mr. Rahim's Arabic segment that was added to the September 11th mural passes constitutional muster for two reasons. First, Mr. Rahim acted with a primarily secular objective. And second, the effect of the Arabic segment on the community was not one of religious endorsement. For these reasons, this court should uphold the Court of Appeals and grant summary judgment in favor of Mr. Rahim.
We agree that the symbol used here would make it stand out in that it was not part of a flag, as were all the other symbols, right?
That is correct, Justice Walton. This was a symbol rather than a flag. However, as Justice Stern focused on during opposing counsel's argument, what this court needs to consider is the context in which the display occurs in determining whether or not it violates the Establishment Clause. Here, we are dealing with a symbol that was among many flags of many nations, and more importantly, was the border of an American flag that said, to those lost on September 11th, we will always remember you. In this context, the reasonable observer would look at it and believe that this was just another recognition of the diversity in the community. As opposing counsel correctly notes, the reasonable observer is more informed than a casual passerby. He is deemed to be aware of the history and context in which the display occurs. Thus, as the record states on page 2, one of the purposes behind this mural was to reflect the diversity of the community.
But why couldn't the diversity, I mean, this does stand out, does it not? This is the only non-flag. So isn't this significantly different, and why could the diversity, the reflection of the diversity, not have been shown by having the same symbol included in the flag, since there are Arab nations that do have that symbol on the flag?
I'll respond in two parts. First, it would be more reasonable for a reasonable observer viewing the September 11th mural to consider the symbol in light of the larger American flag and larger sentiment of memoriam. As this court, the plurality of this court found in Al-Hani versus ACLU in 1984, where there was a large Christmas tree with a menorah next to it, they found it was more reasonable to interpret the menorah in light of the larger Christmas tree. Here, we are dealing with a symbol that is much smaller than the larger American flag in the center. Therefore, it is more reasonable to interpret the meaning of the symbol in light of the larger flag. In addition, Mr. Rahim is not required to choose the most secular alternative available. As this court recognized last term in Van Orden versus Perry, that government need not show hostility towards religion nor a callous indifference, and that simply having a religious message does not necessarily make something violate the Establishment Clause. What the court needs to consider, more importantly, is the context. And here, the context is we're dealing with a community, as the record states on page 2, that is very diverse and has a high population of Arab and Middle Eastern people.
But you would agree that the symbol has religious connotations, right?
Yes.
And the two words associated with the symbol also have religious connotations, right?
Yes, however,
and that none of the other flags have that dual effect.
One would have felt slow. However, there was messages in the Mayan piece in various languages. For example, Kedius Tenga and Tugoria, may God keep you in your glory, also refers to God and is somewhat religious.
But the flag itself did not have religious connotations.
No. However, what this court needs to consider was that the purpose behind this entire medieval meal was to, one, memorialize those lost on September 11th, and two, reflect the diversity of the community. It is true that memorials do have a religious flavor. However, they have a legitimate secular purpose. So including somewhat religious...
Legitimate, or does it have to be predominantly secular purpose?
Legitimate secular purpose. Because we're considering what the reasonable observer interprets the meaning to be when viewing the display.
After McCreary and Van Orden, what do you believe to be the controlling test as we've defined it?
The endorsement test. Although McCreary does state that the Lemon test, it is not overruling the Lemon test, its analysis is equivalent to the endorsement test, which applies the first and second prongs of the Lemon test, the purpose and effect. However, what the endorsement
can you recite what you believe to be the test?
The test is whether government purpose is primarily religious, and whether the effect on the community is one of religious endorsement. The third part of Lemon, the excessive entanglement, as this court noted in Mitchell versus Hunt, has been considered a factor in determining the effect. Because in the context of display, the only real excessive entanglement issue that arises comes with the political divisiveness. And if there is a divisive potential, that demonstrates whether the effect is one of religious endorsement or not.
But isn't your problem here that you're mixing up or collapsing when you can refer to the diversity of the community, national diversity versus religious diversity, and in all, with respect to all other areas of diversity, the symbol shown on the flag dealt with national origins, not with religion. And this is the only case, therefore, in terms of the Arab community, that the way to include them was in a religious symbol, and that was very different from the national symbol to represent the diversity of the remainder of the community. Isn't that correct?
No, Justice Peirce, because we are dealing with the Arab world, which is primarily Muslim. And we are dealing with an Arab world that does not necessarily have separation of church and state, as we like to believe that we do. Therefore, by recognizing this area of the world, it is likely that there may be a religious way of doing it because that is how these people identify themselves. Just as the Israeli flag has the Star of David on it to symbolize the beliefs of those people. Responding to
that is a flag, right? I mean, you do recognize there's a difference when a symbol that is arguably religious in another context appears on the flag. One can construe it as more of a national than a religious symbol, correct?
Of course, Justice Post. However, here, Mr. Ahim could not have just chosen one flag to recognize this area, because we are also dealing with an area of the world that is in high turmoil, and by choosing one particular flag over others, this could have served to further divide the students in believing that the school favored one nationality over another in the Arab world. Rather, Mr. Ahim's purpose was to recognize the greater region. And by doing this, he chose a symbol that is appears on many of the flags in this region.
Is there anything in the record that supports the proposition that these flags that were used, well, that there are other regions of the world where only one flag may have been used to represent the entire people of that region? Is there anything in the record that suggests that that's not the case?
Justice Walton, unfortunately, there is no evidence of exactly what the makeup of the Libertyville community was. It is true that there were only 17 flags besides the American flag that appear on this. So some flags may have been used to represent a greater region. But the problem here is because this is such a tumultuous region that choosing one flag over another does not work as well in this region of the world as it may work in other regions. Therefore,
why do you say that? What in the record supports that?
Nothing in the record, however...
I mean, I would assume the people of Central America would not feel that the flag of Nicaragua represented all of them.
No. However, that is not the case here. We are dealing specifically with the Arab students. Though Mr. Ahim did not indicate that other particular students weren't recognized, he only recognized that it was these Arab and Middle Eastern students that weren't being recognized on the Libertyville mural.
Ms. Hayes, let's assume, hypothetically, that your client had the best of motives, and it was designed to show the nature of what a community should be. Is the reaction of the community, of the reasonably objective member of the community, relevant? And is the timing of the objection relevant to our consideration of the issue?
Yes. The reasonable person's view or the effect on the reasonable observer is highly relevant. And it is important to consider this mural when it was put up, what the reaction of the community was. Here, as the record states on page 12, footnote 2, some people in the community found Mr. Rahim's Arabic segment to be distasteful. However, this court cannot lose sight of the fact that this was in the September 11th and was erected shortly after these events. Therefore, as the hijackers are alleged to be of the Islamic faith, as the record states on page 12, the fact that they found it distasteful was more along the lines of these terms appearing in the context of September 11th, not along religious lines. And just because someone finds a display distasteful or inflammatory is not enough to make it a constitutional violation.
Although there's nothing in the record on this, is your client's religious beliefs of any significance in our assessment on this issue?
Perhaps if he is of Arab descent or of the Muslim religion, that may go to what the reasonable observer would believe his purpose was. However, here, he has a stated purpose, which was to include the previously excluded students. In addition, if he was of Arab descent or of the Muslim faith, he would know a way that would best represent these people in the world. And he would also understand the fact that we are dealing with an area that is so highly religious in their secular lives, unlike Americans. In addition, because the reasonable observer is...
And because this symbol and the words stand out and have the religious connotation that they do, is it reasonable to expect that a reasonable observer would believe that the reason this symbol and these words are there is to defeat the negative impression that people may have about Islam as it related to 9/11, and therefore directly has a religious motive behind it?
Perhaps. However, the reasonable observer is also aware of the meaning of these Muslim words. And these words do have more of a meaning than they do on their face. Here, as a Muslim American society wrote, the term Shahada is a term that is recited, this creed is recited in every crisis and at every moment when the world threatens to overwhelm a Muslim. As the record states on page 21, this mural spoke to those lost on September 11th and those surviving that have lost people. Here we are talking about a community, the Arab community, that did lose people on September 11th. But including the terms he used, he was speaking to them in messages of memorial and peace and jihad and being able to overcome the discrimination that many Muslims in this country felt after September 11th. Therefore, his terms and the symbols were in line with the purposes behind this mural, and therefore the effect on the reasonable observer is not one of religious endorsement. In addition, his purpose also cannot be seen as religious, because, as this court noted in McCreary last term, McCreary involved the Ten Commandments. The county had made several attempts before making it to the Supreme Court at having their display pass constitutional muster. The first two were found to be motivated by a religious objective. This court focused on the fact, when the third trial came up before it, that no reasonable observer could cast off the religious objective that had been found in the earlier displays. Here, as the record states on page 2, Mr. Rahim is the one who approved funding for the secular mural. It would be similarly unreasonable for an objective observer here to swallow the claim that he had suddenly cast aside his earlier secular motivation to suddenly be one of a religious objective. Therefore, there is no, the eyes that look to purpose, which are the religious observer, would not see it as a religious objective. Therefore, because respondent acted with a primarily secular purpose in trying to include the previously excluded Arab and Middle Eastern students to the Libertyville September 11th mural, and because the effect on the reasonable observer who is aware of the meaning of these words would not find it to be one of religious endorsement, this court should uphold the Court of Appeals and grant summary judgment in favor of Mr. Rahim.
Thank you, Ms. Hayes. Let me ask the board, if the petitioner has any time for them.
He did, 2 minutes.
I was going to argue. Ms. Hayes, will you see that? Go ahead.
Your Honor, first, opposing counsel mischaracterizes the holding of the Court of Appeals. In fact, that court held that the decision of the district court should be reversed and remanded for further findings of fact not inconsistent with that opinion. Second, the Spanish phrase referenced by opposing counsel refers to God in a civil context and does not endorse a particular religion. In contrast, the Arabic segment endorses a particular religion, that of Islam. And finally, while the principal's motives may have included to recognize Muslim students in the community, which would be a valid objective, he simply went about this in an inappropriate manner, which had the effect of endorsing religion in violation of the establishment.
Whether it did or it did not, let me ask this question after hearing all of these arguments. Based on the record, is there not at least an inference that your termination was retaliatory action for what he at least perceived to be protected activity?
Your Honor, while there may be that inference, the district court correctly determined that there was sufficient evidence to show that in fact the school board was not acting in a retaliatory manner and was within their constitutional rights to terminate the principal's employment. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. Decision is reserved. We'll be back with a decision shortly.
Okay.
Let me see.